This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawera Karatai. Kia ora, Mawera.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. Who are we introducing today? We should say that this is the, I think it's the fourth, of our series of Coming Up for Air.
Yes, it is my great pleasure to introduce the very wonderful Harrison Boyes. Welcome, Harrison. It is a great joy to have you here today.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Harrison. Where are you, Harrison?
I am in Takapuna on the north shore of Auckland. Where I grew up and still here.
We'll forgive you for that. What was it like growing up in Takapuna?
Yeah, it was good. Well, actually, a lot of my time was actually between Greenhithe and Devonport, and recently moved about 5 minutes down the road to Takapuna, but... not too far. It was really good. I think it's a fortunate place to grow up with a lot of beaches and lots of opportunities and great schools and things like that. So really good experience. A free kind of life, roaming around and hanging out with your friends and learning a lot of things, I think.
I think it's a very perfectly designed mix of almost small town, quite close, if you take the ferry, to the middle of Auckland.
Yes. Well, we weren't part of Auckland for a long time, so we never considered ourselves Aucklanders. It was North Shore City until whenever the super city change happened, and then we were suddenly Jaffers.
I think if it's any consolation, we always knew you were Aucklanders.
Yeah. It wasn't. We could see it across the water, you know.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
I don't think I really ever had a solid idea, to be honest. I think I wanted to be... in business, trying to create things, trying to, you know, I guess add a bit of value. And I was always interested in all sorts of things. So I could never really land on one thing. I think I, you know, played music, did sports, interested in things like geography and was good with numbers. It was all kind of all over the show. And I've kind of drifted into somewhere which I think leans on a few of those things. So it's good.
And what is that?
So I work in media, in the media buying space. So that's within the advertising industry. So it's a bit of a mix of marketing and numbers, essentially, where we're kind of doing that. But really my role within that now is around standards and kind of corporate social responsibility and sustainability. So it's how do we assess the partners that we work with, like, you know, it could be meta platforms like Instagram and Facebook, could be YouTube, could be local media partners, about how they kind of conduct themselves within what we've termed as like the translation of corporate social responsibility into media. So that's like data ethics, sustainability, safety, so like user safety as well as brand safety, which is I've spent a lot of time doing actually, as well as inclusivity. So thinking about how diverse voices online, and it has a lot of different meanings because I work across Asia Pacific. And it has many different meanings across different countries, and it's an interesting one to navigate.
We would like to think that the relationships that we have with those internationals would rub off on them. Do you think it does if we start talking about
Indigenous data sovereignty or any of those sorts of things? Do you think Meta takes notice?
I think they do to a degree. I think they do think about, look, if you think about a social media platform, it's kind of like its own society. It's got its own firefighters, police force, all these things. A lot of it's run by machines and computers. But I think they do think about things like there's a lot of work on algorithmic bias, making sure that things aren't inadvertently, like content and ads aren't inadvertently being seen by people where it's inappropriate. Whether that's effective or not is a different story. I don't think you could overinvest in that area, but you know, they certainly have a lot of people employed to do it. But yeah, I think they try.
And what do you have to do to get their attention?
Well, for us, so we're quite a large global advertising agency, and we represent quite a significant amount of spend on behalf of clients. So I think they listen to us because we have a trading relationship with them. And we conduct something called the Media Responsibility Index, which is basically an assessment across those areas that I talked about. And so Facebook and Instagram are included within that, YouTube, TikTok, Pinterest, kind of all the major global, I would say, Western social media platforms are included in that, although I have done some work on the Chinese platforms as well, which is really interesting. And they participate fully. They kind of give us the information about what they're doing in those areas, and we kind of analyze it and give them our opinions back as well.
It's not that long ago, I think it was Barnbrook said that the time has come that the designer could no longer be a transparent tool or something like that. By designer, he was talking about designing for marketing. Mm-hmm. That the person, people responsible for delivering this product, were responsible for it. So you couldn't just say, oh, I'm designing this horrible, unethical thing we could think of, gun for killing children, and then say, oh no, but what our job is to make sure it's shiny.
Yeah. Well, I think everyone typically has positive intent, right? But I think things do grow to a certain size where, you know, it's so massive. It's bigger than countries. It's bigger than continents in terms of the people using it. And I think it's interesting to think about, like, I guess the structure of these organizations. And they are really top down. It's more, not really a government, you know, many Western countries would consider themselves a democracy. You probably wouldn't consider that for these entities that are running these social media platforms. It's more of a I don't want to use the word there's less votes from the people that are using it, let's say.
Does it go the other way? Do those big companies drive change in that space by how they position things?
I think they do. I think in kind of the early years of Facebook and Meta scaling, you saw things like I think even, you know, political revolutions and like Egypt and things like that, which were largely run through Facebook. And some might see that, you know, as a good thing, as the population kind of exercising their rights through digital communications. But that obviously, you know, can have a lot of other negative consequences as well, in terms of how it can be used and how it can be manipulated, and think about elections and that type of thing. It's an interesting space for sure.
Do you see much modifying of stories if you're putting out a product or a message, what do you say, across Asia Pacific? Do you have to tell the story differently in different places?
Yeah, I think we actually had a pitch for a client recently where I think they were trying to get across their products and try and appeal to women with their products. And I think the meaning of that in different countries, especially where they're, you know, very politically conservative, have a heavy religious influence, you kind of have to tailor that messaging to that. And as much as one, you know, it's hard for a brand to say what is the right thing to do within the context of that country. But they try and adapt to it, I think, but also try and push. I think we're seeing some, you know, I would say activist brands or ones who are trying to be a bit more liberal in some of these more conservative countries, and it's just pushing the right tones and not going too hard too early, I guess.
The One of the biggest tensions that I see in business and sustainability is an inherent mismatch between a buy more stuff mentality. Yeah. And even if you're doing good stuff, you still want people to buy more of it.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's definitely a conflict within advertising, and there's starting to be recognition of that. I think, and it's something I'm actually looking at doing within my thesis, is like, how, you know, if the consumer demands switch to products that are, say, last longer, can be repaired, are recyclable, then these brands will follow. It's just that those perceptions perhaps aren't there, and there's things like, I can't remember the term, but it's planned obsolescence, I think it is. Like that those things exist. And I think trying to turn the tide on that is probably going to come from a consumer perspective. And, you know, I think the communications industry has the power to change that. If there's a brand that has those products and there's consumers that demand them, then those things are going to meet. But, yeah, it's definitely a conflict because and there's, you know, power of communications and also some of the dark sides of it as well. And it's trying to balance those things. But I've heard a lot of things about, you know, kind of throwing out the baby with the bathwater of whatever that term was, is like just stop kind of advertising and communicating products, whereas actually we could use that communications vehicle to drive the right change.
And it must be harder to sell a message of don't buy this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's probably more about buying better quality products. And it's probably a thing with people to kind of get over the fact there might be a slightly more upfront investment, but down the line you might not actually have to pay more because the product will last longer. We were looking at, I think for our last assignment, about e-waste, and I think it's a perfect example about electronics devices and how long they last, how you can repair them. If there's that kind of that idea easily communicated to people when they know when they're purchasing a product that this will last 7 years instead of one, that the price might be less of a challenge.
Do you think the market's getting more sophisticated? Are people seeing through greenwash in the sense of you can put some ferns and a dolphin on it and it's bingo, it's green?
Yeah, I think it's definitely gone almost past that. I think in Australia there's been a lot of brands that are wary of even marketing their green credentials because of fines around greenwashing and things like that, which is very fair. And I think we do a lot of training around greenwashing and talking to our clients about that. So it's making sure that you're authentic and can back everything up. But unfortunately, we've actually seen some brands who are doing really good things who actually won't even talk about it publicly because they're too scared, which is, you know, there's a balance there somewhere.
Are we ready for those business models of the buy these jeans and the what you're doing is buying jeans that will last forever? I think there's been several goes at marketing those sorts of things and they never really take off.
Yeah, I think it's probably, again, it's going to take a big shift in, I guess, consumer behaviour, is how you'd phrase it, is people buying products and what they're looking for, and probably realising the long-term benefits of doing something that like that, or even having shoes that can be repairable or jeans that last longer. I just think there's a less of an awareness and perhaps less of an awareness of the long-term effects. And I think the difficult thing with these sustainability things is being able to digest that into a bit of information which happens at the point of purchase, because no one's going to go through reading every company's ESG reports before they buy a pair of jeans. But there needs to be something, and I think that's something that hasn't been figured out, is how to communicate that succinctly and quickly.
I don't know what scale you would consider. Let's invent a scale of sustainable marketing. 1 to 100, what are we at?
I think New Zealand's actually okay. I'm a member of Net Zero, which is an industry initiative to try and tackle these issues. So we've got various working groups. I'm in the media working group. There's one for production. There's one for creator, for events, and a few other things, so operations as well. So there is a lot of industry effort in New Zealand. I would say the same for the UK, for the US. Australia's starting. I think Ireland's pretty good, and a lot of Europe too. But there's obviously a lot of other countries that aren't really leaned into it. So I could say that New Zealand's doing all right, still a lot to do, but globally, probably not significant.
Can we increment ourselves there, or is it going to take a disruption?
I think I think New Zealand can definitely show leadership and show how sustainable marketing can work, but it's going to take a shift in other countries in terms of mentality and pricing and probably even standards of living, so people can even think or consider about things that are beyond what's going on my table this week or putting clothes on my back, because I think you need to, it's kind of unfortunate, I think you need to be pretty well as a person to start thinking about these things, and that's one of the big challenges that I think the world has around that.
Is there an understood meaning of sustainability in the marketing space, that's what we know the population understands, that's what we're going to go? Or is there a sort of more complicated thing that, complex perhaps, that you're trying to push?
Yeah, I think it's in terms of, we're looking at it as an industry in terms of business operations as any other industry does, but there's specific things that we look at that are important in our industry. I think one of them is climate misinformation. Talk about social media platforms, rogue news platforms that are AI content farms that are producing kind of climate misinformation. A lot of people are seeing them. So if we're changing, or making sure that we're not funding any of that content, then it puts a lot of brakes on it. So that's a big effort that we're trying to do. And I think just greenwashing is a big one as well. Making sure that those communications are considerate. And obviously along making sure that you're not overselling your green credentials, that's really important. And then I think there's a lot of research that also gets done into consumer behavior and those shifting trends. We are seeing shifting trends in consumers wanting to purchase more sustainable products, even paying more. But again, it's probably isolated to those, I guess, Western countries that I've talked about.
In this post-truth era that we had for a long time and perhaps is coming back, is it harder to get a cut through on just the facts?
Yeah, I think there is, and I think there's probably a scary element of sustainability and that people might not want to think about. So I think there's a challenge there on how sustainability and consumer choice and people's choices with products and these types of things actually happens and how it's communicated and how people are motivated. And I think communications industry has a role to play in that. Much like we see, seatbelt ads for safety, maybe there's something to think about there with shifting perceptions in towards products and what we're doing, because it is a society safety issue. And maybe if we treated it similarly, then there might be a bit more effort towards changing and putting out those communications.
Let's squeeze in your music track, Tahuna Breaks, Reflections. Why this one?
I like the song, and I think it's an interesting one. Talks about a little bit about the past and how you can always put a bit of a grass is always greener attitude on what's happened in the past. And I think that, in sustainability, we probably, there's probably elements of the past, and definitely elements of the past that we want to look at. There's a lot of bad things that happened in the past, and we need to go and create our own future that's unique and different, and not kind of live in the past.
Different. evil sprite of the forest of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, namahi aroha no kia koutou ko tahuahau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. I really hope, wherever you are, whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are. A triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very challenging. So many aspects of our lives have changed, and so many fundamental safeguards and structures and ways of being that we just took for granted were removed from our lives. And we've all had to journey through this time together. So of course I would hope that this could be a global leveler, and this could be a way for us all to connect and communicate going into the future, to help each other and to envision a future together that is much more positive for many more people. And of course this show is a wonderful example of that. We hear these great stories of courage and personal transformation and change, and it's a great honour for me to be part of this show. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blown Bubbles team for having me. It's very special for me to have this time with you all. Thank you. And of course, as a species, we love to communicate in many different ways. And we each have our own unique story. And this story can change and does change throughout our lives. And the story that we tell ourselves, the story that we allow to be our personal narrative, this story is malleable and this story is under our control, which it's very important to acknowledge, because for me I believe it's so important that the stories we tell ourselves and the stories that we believe are ones which help us, are ones which help us to bring forth the best aspects of ourselves, to celebrate the best aspects of ourselves, and to acknowledge that those aspects often come forward in challenging times. And in many ways, we are the hero, we are the precious, precious pearl forming within the world as our oyster. That we are the ones in our own lives who are our constant companion, who are offering a home to this fascinating and mysterious consciousness that we all have, that we all possess. And this consciousness is so precious. And so the stories that we tell ourselves, I believe, should be there to reinforce our strengths, should be there to reinforce our sense of courage, should be there to reinforce our sense of our own capacities and our own abilities. Also, those stories should feature moments when we know that we have helped others, moments when we know that we have made a difference to others. And a lot of the time we don't know. We may do a lot of things that brighten someone's day, that change someone's life for the better, and we may never know, but that can always be our intention as we move out into the world. So I really hope for you, whatever stories you are choosing for yourself at the moment, that they uplift you and they remind you of the beautiful and capable and strong person that you are. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Harrison Boys.
Harrison, before we listen to your podcast, is there anything in particular that you would like the listeners to know about, or anything in particular that you want them to listen for?
I think the business that I talk with Tom, I think it's a really interesting use of technology making sustainability easier, and I think there's a big role for technology to make that happen and make, especially for smaller enterprises which don't have the resources to get on that sustainability journey, technology plays a huge role, and Carbon Trail is a really interesting example of that.
Hello and welcome to Coming Up for Air, Contemporary Issues in Sustainability. I'm your host, Harrison Boys, and today we're going to delve into the daunting task of small and medium enterprises and how they're coming to grips with sustainability challenges. But first, I just wanted to discuss a couple of sources that got me to this point, and then we'll move on to the discussion with Tom. All right, so a recent article by Greg Harrell at Business Test was shared with me. We reported on a couple of surveys that have drawn the conclusion that sustainability is slipping down the ladder of priorities for small to medium businesses, the ones especially who are struggling in tougher economic times. It's a really interesting article, and it got me thinking on what those barriers are for integrating sustainability within small to medium organizations. I stumbled across a journal article called A Comprehensive Model for Developing SME Net Zero Capabilities and Incorporating Grey Literature. Very long title. But that was from Keele University in the UK. A key theme identified within that review is a need for small to medium enterprises to understand their carbon footprint and then seek to reduce it. So that road then led me to Tom Hallam, whose company Carbon Trail is on a mission to make the often onerous task of emissions measurement and reduction easier and more accessible for those small and medium-sized businesses. Carbon Trail is at the forefront of this very important issue, and as small to medium enterprises make up over 95% of New Zealand businesses, it's so important that we have people like Tom and his team out there trying to make a difference. All right, I'll stop talking and I'll bring in Tom, who's going to kick things off with a bit of background about himself and of Carbon Trail as well.
My background is in software engineering. So I've worked in software engineering my entire adult life. Used to work for Dyson in the UK doing kind of smart home, Internet of Things stuff. Worked in kind of mobile agencies, worked for myself, worked for a company called Jade down here in Christchurch. But around April 22, I think I was just getting more and more turned off by the kind of financial services world, which is what I was doing at Jade, and wanted to put my skills to use in the kind of the fight against the climate crisis, which is something that I'm, you know, really, really passionate about and really want to, you know, see a turnaround and a result. So Carbon Trail was sort of born out of that, really. We wanted to make it as easy for businesses of all sizes to understand their emissions and do something about it. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. And awesome. I think that kind of journey that you're taking into, you know, I guess it's making it easier for small, medium enterprises to kind of measure their carbon emissions. Right. Mm-hmm. So from what I understand, it's a bit of software that makes it easier. You can plug into Xero, but maybe if you could just kind of talk through exactly, you know, what it is.
Yeah. So, that's a good question. So, yeah, we connect into various accounting tools. So Xero, MYB, you can also upload a CSV file from your ledger. And we categorize each and every one of those transactions automatically using a machine learning model. And that machine learning model basically says, okay, given these parts of a transaction, we go, okay, well, which of the 200 plus sort of emissions categories that we kind of manage does it fit into? We make a prediction. That kind of, you know, takes a lot of the heavy lifting away from the company that's running it. Spend-based calculations like that only go kind of so far. I don't know how much you know about the sort of differences, but basically a spend-based calculation says for every dollar spent in a certain category, there is an economic model that's used to determine roughly how much carbon dioxide is emitted per dollar spent. And that's cool and a really good way to get started and really useful if you don't have any other kind of primary data. So for your supply chain, that can be quite useful. But we realized pretty early on that that was only kind of a part of the story because it's not especially accurate in all cases. There's a lot of assumptions built into those models. And we wanted quite quickly to move away from that. So we also now connect into electricity meters, fuel cards. We can read data from, you know, invoices from freight, that sort of stuff, from waste. And we turn that into primary activity data. So that's your kilowatt hours, your liters, your, you know, kilograms of waste, what have you. And that's much, much more accurate. We've been working and iterating towards a place where, you know, with half an hour or so's worth of setup, you can get a audit ready inventory out of the back of the tool. Yeah, that's what we're about to launch. So we've got a brand new version of the tool that's about to come out early this month. Just got a couple more things to tick off the list. But yeah, that's what we'll be offering to the market.
Okay. That's awesome. Cause I think, you know, one of the big challenges for small, medium enterprises that I've seen and read about and heard about is really, you know, one is kind of cost and one is time, expertise, all these types of things. So what I'm assuming that this kind of helps with is reducing that time, right?
So we really want to short circuit the whole process of measuring. And I think it is fair to say that a lot of these kind of, you know, incumbent businesses, there is a lot of manual stuff still going on. And it's because these are science-based organizations that have kind of now find themselves in this sort of, you know, technology-enabled world, whereas we've kind of taken a sort of a technology-first approach. But I think there's definitely, you know, there's a part for both to play. So what we do is we make that measurement much easier, and then we would hand over to an audit organization such as Toyota, you know, ECOS, or, you know, an external auditor to then produce that kind of that final result, or, you know, get the badge or the certification or whatever the company's trying to do. But yeah, so we believe that there's been a whole heap of inefficiency around obviously doing the measurement, but also managing documentation. So, you know, actually having the evidence for a measurement is really important. Yeah. And understanding, okay, so we've got this bill from a power company. How does that get through to a carbon dioxide equivalent measurement? So we're just trying to apply all of the kind of, you know, modern best practices to that process. And we believe by doing that, we can reduce the time and therefore the cost.
Okay, that's awesome. And I think you touched on another, I think, barrier for companies is their education piece, right? Where do they, what do they do? Where do they start? Do you see Carbon Trail as a starting point on the on that carbon journey? I guess if you've got, you know, a lot of the data there, a way in with what where you're spending, is that an initial first step, or where in the stages do you see yourself kind of coming in on that sustainability journey for a small medium business?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one, and we realized that I think when we first launched the product, we kind of assumed that people were kind of ready to go on the journey, right? And actually, you're absolutely right. Education is a huge part of that story. We've actually just launched a kind of a free education series that takes people through from the why would we even bother talking about this in the first place? And also kind of, you know, zooming on the fact that it's not just carbon, right? Like carbon, yeah. My company is called Carbon Trail, but we, you know, we're trying to enable a whole different conversation around sustainability in general and using those tools to enable that. But you're absolutely right. Like people have to have that kind of wide view of sustainability, understand all the moving parts in their organization, understand where the emission sources could be. For a lot of businesses, they don't necessarily realize that if you have subsidiaries, how they get included into an inventory, if you have investments, how they might get included into an inventory of, you know, discussion around sustainability. And then also about bringing your employees and your management team along the way. Often it's not actually the leaders of businesses that are talking to us. It's someone in maybe a finance team. Maybe it's someone who's got a request from a customer or their bank for some information. That might not necessarily be the CEO. So how do you manage upwards, you know, on that? So there's a lot of stuff that isn't about the technology or about the measurement in there. You know? And I've always sort of known this as a technologist, like you can put in a piece of software all you want, but if the rest of the journey hasn't kind of happened, that exploration and that understanding and coming to grips with, you know, the various terms and what you're going to get out of it as a business, You could use a spreadsheet, you could write it on a bit of toilet paper. It doesn't really matter because the end result's going to be a bit, you know, it's not going to be fully formed. So, yeah, we realize that that education piece is crucial. And then the carbon trail was used to kind of, once people know what they're doing, to help them kind of motor along.
Yeah, I've really noticed that in my industry, actually, and in other industries too, is that, you know, all the people along the chain kind of need to have that education piece for business to take a journey.
I guess something else to add as well, one of the big things that we're doing now is, I'm not sure how much you're aware about the legislation, but New Zealand's kind of led the way in terms of large businesses having to report their carbon footprint. And that includes banks, for example. So banks now need to understand the emissions of their customers that they lend to. And it's really interesting because for the very first time, you've got SMEs that are being asked for this information. It might not even be the sorts of businesses that would be, you know, first to the, you know, first to come and pick up a piece of software like Carbon Trail. They might be, you know, trying to figure out what it means for them, or maybe they're not even interested in this piece, right? We see plenty of that. But the requests are coming from quite different places to where they would have before, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to enable up and down that chain, that education, and, you know, helping folks understand how they meet their own obligations. Maybe just another piece to add in there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting with that legislation because you kind of highlighted that even though it's targeted at banks and certain size companies, the downstream effects of lending to businesses encompasses all kind of small, medium businesses, right? It's legislation in disguise for all businesses, to be honest.
Yes, exactly.
Which will hopefully, you know, drive uptake. There's a little bit of carrot and stick, right? But it's good to have a balance of both. But I think, I've had a little kind of bit of anecdotal feedback from, you know, friends and other people who have small businesses and going on that journey. And it's just, especially if they're really small, like one or two people, it feels like they're not kind of even in the, you know, world of starting to think about that kind of thing because of the extra burden. Have you dealt with those very small companies?
Yeah. We kind of refer to them as micro businesses, not in like a diminutive way, but like, you know, because small to medium business is such a broad term that takes you from one person to like, you know, 300 people.
Yes.
And it's different in everyone's mind. But yes, we have a couple of sole traders on the platform. Anecdotally, they're actually after a B Corp certification. So a big part of the B Corp process is understanding your environment kind of position, as well as your, you know, the rest of the kind of ESG side of things. Mm-hmm. One of the great things about a tool like Carbon Trail is it almost sits, you know, in the same sort of sphere as Xero, where it's kind of doing its thing in the background. You know you can rely on it when you need it, but you don't need to constantly babysit it. You know, it's not like a spreadsheet where you are ultimately responsible for those every single minute calculation. You can kind of offload that thinking. But again, this is where we noticed a bit of a gap, and that's where we've started to produce this kind of educational content as well, which we think will be even more valuable to those that are incredibly stretched, like these kind of micro businesses.
Definitely. And where do you see, I guess, your business moving? You see, you've talked about your kind of journey from, I guess, just inputting that spend data from a accounting software into the kind of added parts and all these types of things. Where do you see your kind of next steps to help make it easier for the business? Where are you kind of investing in R&D?
Yeah, so our whole kind of concept is we want to have the integrations to various data sources. You shouldn't have to be in a situation where you're manually entering anything into Carbon Trail. So for example, let's say for an agricultural business, you can manually enter in the kilograms of nitrogen in your fertilizer, but you could foresee a world where, okay, well, what if we had an integration with, you know, the fertilizer manufacturer, you know, and there's a couple of big ones here in New Zealand. We know that they've got great data. So how do we go, okay, how do we kind of bridge the gap, as it were? And that's just one example. You know, other places where there's kind of quite heavy investment from us is that document management, recognition side of things. So invoices coming from your freight provider, your receipts from your, you know, your purchases of fuel, whatever it is. That data all exists inside an organization. It's just an information management problem. And I think up until quite recently, that's all been quite disparate. inside an organization. Tools like Xero now, where you can upload your receipts and invoice and stuff against the transaction, and making that a lot easier. But we want to kind of make the most of that data that exists around an organization. So that's where the investment is.
Okay, that's awesome. Is there any kind of success stories that you could share that you've worked with on along your journey?
I think most of them have been about, I think, opening businesses' eyes to understanding, you know, actually there is quite a lot of carbon in the business, and folks actually starting to take some, you know, real steps to reduce. So, you know, we've had stories of people changing their suppliers or switching to EVs through the tool, through the data that they found from the tool. We've set ourselves, a big vision around, you know, we want to, you know, be getting megatons of carbon avoided. And, we're definitely on the way to that. I think it's been more about, seeing those internal changes for me and knowing that our software is actually, you know, actually actively avoiding those emissions in the first place. And we're moving towards our mission.
Awesome. And we've got a common question that we've devised across every interview that we're doing is all of the students in this paper. I'm going to throw it at you, but if you could change one thing right now that would make the most significant positive difference for the future, what would that be? It's a big question.
Yeah, that's a huge one, eh? I think it's got to be something to do with fossil fuels for me, right? I think if we could, make it completely illegal for fossil fuel companies to lobby government in any way, because it's never for the planet's good. And I think about it often that fossil fuel companies knew back in the 70s that what they were doing was going to be having dramatically bad effects to the world. And it was obviously, you know, profits came before that. And then you've got companies like BP and Shell that are engaging in some astronomical greenwashing kind of campaigns, all enabled because the governments are like, yeah, that's fine. So I think actually having working laws around lobbying and who can, you know, be bought and sold would make a astronomical difference, because as soon as you remove the marketing engines around these companies, we would be able to unlock the amazing innovations that are already out there for, you know, moving past, you know, oil, coal, gas, and petrol. So, yeah, I think that's mine.
Well, I'm sure you found that as interesting as me and now hold a lot more hope for the future of sustainability in small to medium businesses. If you do want to contact Tom and the team or find out more information on the company, head to carbontrail.co.nz. But that's it from me. Thank you all for listening. This is a one-off episode, so I wish I could say I'd be back next week, but who knows what the future will bring. Cheers, everyone.
Harrison, that was really interesting. Thank you very much. What was your takeaway from this experience and from the interview?
I think that, if people put in effort, startup businesses, be entrepreneurial, that you can make a difference and can make changes and make the effort easier for businesses to make change.
Harrison, when you think about the future of sustainability, where are we headed?
Yeah, I think we're headed to a better place where it's easier to implement these things. There's a lot of daunting frameworks and things to abide by and certifications and things like that. But I think with the use of technology and more knowledge and more efforts, that it's going to become and is becoming easier for businesses to do. So I think it's just an encouragement to go out there and do it.
What does that look like in practical terms from a business perspective?
So I think from a basic thing is probably just education on the key topics of what it is to be sustainable within a business, and then going out and doing the simple thing that I think we did in a paper last year, Marwetta, of doing a carbon footprint, and it gives you the best understanding of where your carbon emissions are, and I think things spiral off from there.
Do you think there's enough understanding out in the business community of what that looks like about, you know, oh, I can just go online and I can generate this carbon footprint and I can start taking responsibility for what I'm doing as a business?
I don't think so. I think there's, I think it's something that often gets put off or too in the too hard basket. But it's, I think it's becoming a lot easier. So I think, yeah, the education piece is definitely something that's trying to help with. And I think Tom actually talks about it because he started off on, you know, doing the carbon measurement, but then he suddenly realized that he actually is starting to create educational videos on the topics and things like that, which is great. So people can understand and don't make it too confusing for people because they might not do it.
Yeah, it's so easy to just lose people. As soon as it gets complicated, people lose their enthusiasm.
Harrison, I have some questions to end the show. What is the biggest success you've had in the last year or so?
I honestly think it's all the learnings I've got from the master's program. It's trying to translate into my work as well. And it keeps me with a keener eye on how we're doing sustainability assessments within our business. And we've conducted a lot of those. And it's just a more of an understanding of how it's kind of impacting our industry and how different partners that we work with are actually tackling the sustainability issue.
What's your superpower?
When I can get into a mode of working, I can get into the zone and I can do things pretty quickly, but unfortunately it's few and far between.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
I don't know. I've never really thought of myself as an activist, just kind of, I think I'm a real practical person, so I try to go out and try and implement things, and if I see a problem, try and, you know, create solutions to it. And that's probably, that's an activist, I don't know, but that's what I try and do.
It's your definition of it, so if that's what it is, then that's what it is. Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
I would say that it's, in short, it's business in perpetuity, but what that means, if we're talking about sustainable business, it's business in perpetuity, but that means considerations for all the things and all the stakeholders and all the systems that your business can impact, and not just the P&L.
And what motivates you? What gets you up in the morning?
I like learning about interesting things. That's really what gets me up.
And what challenge or opportunity are you looking forward to in the next year or so?
Writing my thesis, so I'm going to be starting that soon. I think that's a good opportunity. And just trying to continue on the work that I'm doing in sustainability and work as well, and trying to, you know, just build on my skills, to be honest, and be more effective.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Just go out there and do it. If there's something, a bit of change that you want to make, you know, we've all got the same brains relatively. I don't think, you know, there's not, at the end of the day, rocket scientists and sustainability people and doctors and whoever all have the same brain. So I think it's very similar anyway. So I think we all are capable of making an impact.
Thank you for that. Mawira.
Harrison, it has been joyful sharing the learning space with you over the last year now. And one of the things I've really appreciated about you is your practical approach to things and the way that you're able to frame things in a way that everybody gets it. And that is an extremely unique skill. Taking complex issues and making them easy to understand. Thank you very much for an incredibly thoughtful interview today, for your podcast, and for bringing all of yourself to your learning environments, and to the whole team. So I wish you all the best in your future, and thanks for being here today.
Cool. Thank you, Mawira. You've been great as well. And that's something I've actually been trying to work at for a few years, so thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Harrison. We are going out in a celebration of marketing. We're going out to James Brown. Papa's Got a Brand New Bag.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world, brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This is from our Coming Up for Air series. We were joined by Harrison Boys. We're a Karakai. I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mate wa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.